They forced me to watch the entire first season of their karate show, and I made some new popsicle treats I found on Pinterest for the horses and chickens that Noah made fun of me for, but the animals loved. I watched them for a solid hour picking at the frozen corn. It was so cute.
"Come on," Jake barks, gripping me hard. "You should have caught on to this by now."
"It's been 2 days. Give me a break." I stop trying to kick and scoot up, swinging both of my fists right for his face. He rears back, but I clip his nose. He releases me, and I scramble to my feet, facing him with a ready stance. He holds his nose, his eyes watering.
"Ouch," he grunts.
Yesterday, he decided I needed a little more raising than the boys, since I'd found myself up at the lake alone with Terrence several days ago and wanted to teach me some self-defense. Caleb is off hunting, and Noah's watching TV. Jake sniffles and shakes it off, putting up his hands to go again.
"Why not just give me a gun?" I ask. "Isn't that the mountain man answer for everything?"
"Sure, once you put down your avocado toast."
I laugh, shoving him in the chest. "I don't eat that." I feel his chuckle as he whips me around and locks me in a hold.
"What are you going to do?"
he taunts, tightening his arms around me as I squirm.
"Come on, what do you do?"
He only hesitates a moment before he releases me and digs his fingers into my stomach, tickling me. I curl up, trying not to laugh as both of us fall to the mat, my back crashing on top of his chest.
"No, no, no!"
I hug myself against his onslaught, squirming and wiggling as I chuckle.
"Stop!"
He finally does, placing his hands on my waist as I drop my head back to his chest and we both try to catch our breaths.
"Pretty sure you'll all just need to chaperone me everywhere, because this is useless," I tell him.
His chest shakes with a silent laugh, and within a moment everything is quiet as I lie there. My body starts to warm, and my smile falls as I feel him under me, aware of every ridge of his muscles, every bulge of his body. I turn my head, looking at him, and I see the embarrassment in his eyes because he knows I feel it. I made him hard. My skin tingles under his fingers, and he caresses my hips with just the barest touch. My eyelids flutter. His eyebrows pinch together.
"What is this?"
he murmurs, and I feel his fingers slip under the string of my panties. He follows the fabric over my hip where it sticks out of my jeans all the way to the back where there's almost nothing. He knows what kind of panties I'm wearing, and his breathing turns labored. "I got some in town today," I tell him. I like how they feel, how they look. The girls at school were wearing sexy underwear years ago already. But he looks at me like he's scared of me, and I rub my nose, seeing his Adam's apple move up and down. I didn't mean to unnerve him. It's not about sex. I just like feeling different and buying something Tiernan de Haas would never buy. This is what comes with raising a teenage girl, Jake. He'll see them in the laundry at some point.
"Tiernan?" Noah calls. "Your phone is ringing."
I draw in a breath and slide off Jake, hearing him clear his throat as we both pull up to our feet. Running into the house, I grab my phone off the island, seeing Mirai's name light up on the screen. I answer it.
"Hey,
Tiernan," she bursts out, sounding relieved to reach me. How long had the phone been ringing?
"So good to hear your voice," she says. "I haven't heard from you. I was anxious to see how you're doing."
Jake steps into the kitchen, closing the door, and catches my eyes as he walks for the fridge. My pulse still races.
"I'm good," I tell her. "You like it there? Everything is fine?"
"Yeah." I linger around the island as Jake cracks open a beer. "They keep me busy. Lots of sun and fresh air."
"That's good."
Her voice is gentle, sweet. Had it always sounded like that?
"As long as they're kind to you."
"Yes," I say, knowing Jake is listening. "They're kind to me." I meet his gaze, smiling as he rolls his eyes and smirks.
Listen, I didn't want to bother you, she tells me, but your parents' funeral will be the day after tomorrow. I blink, looking away from my uncle. The funeral. Guilt overtakes me. I hadn't thought about it in days. I actually hadn't thought about my own parents' funeral.
I'm really sorry about the rush, Mirai continues. With certain attendees, we were pressured to work around their schedules.
I nod. Of course. I feel Jake watching me.
You don't have to come, she informs me. Everyone will understand.
My stomach sinks at the thought of getting on a plane, the idea of leaving here, going there. It's the last thing I want to do. But I don't hesitate. Get me a flight, okay? Tonight is fine.
Are you sure?
Jake sets his bottle on the counter, planting both hands as he stares at me. Yes, I tell her. Talk soon.
Okay, she says. Give me an hour.
I hang up and Noah must have heard because he's walking over as soon as I set the phone down.
You're leaving?
He asks, but I look at my uncle. My parents' funeral is the day after tomorrow, I tell him. She'll try to get me a flight tonight. I hate to ask, but can you give me a ride to the airport?
You sure you want to go?
He narrows his eyes.
You don't have to do anything. You can stay, or I could come with you.
You can't, I say. The McDougal customization is behind. I'll be okay. It's fine. He pauses, the wheels in his head turning. After a moment, he walks to the wall and grabs a set of keys. He pushes them over the counter to me.
Take one of the trucks, he says. Park it at the airport so it's there when you come back.
I stare at the keys. There'll be things to deal with at home. The house, the accounts, Mirai, the condolences, obligations they had with charities and fundraisers and...
You're not coming back, Jake finally says when I don't take the keys.
I open my mouth, but nothing comes out. My throat fills with a softball-sized lump that hurts so much. I don't want to leave, but I don't know what's going to happen, for sure. I finally look up at him. There's a lot to deal with there. I can't say how long I'll be. He stares at me, and Noah has nothing to say for the first time since I've been here. Jake sighs and picks up the keys, shoving his beer over to Noah before walking off without another look in my direction.
Let me know when you're ready to leave.
Chapter 13. Tiernan. It's not raining. I thought that was how it was supposed to be during a funeral. Like in the movies, it always rains. The shadows of the trees glide over the windows of the black limo as we ride through Glendale on our way to the cemetery. I lean against the door, Mirai sitting across from me as the procession carries my parents to the chapel first, our car following. Of course it's a beautiful day. The sun never failed to shine on my mother. But then I roll my eyes behind my large black glasses, letting out a quiet sigh. Yeah, I should totally say that in my eulogy. I'll have the whole congregation rolling with laughter at all the cheese. Jesus. I stare out the window, rubbing my gloved hands together, but still nothing comes to mind. Not in the 36 hours since I've been back in California. I can't think of anything to say that doesn't sound like a lie. I mean, they weren't without talent and beauty. Why can't I muster a single heartfelt word to offer up at that podium to fulfill my final duty as their daughter? I should be able to do that. But no, every sweet, saccharine lie makes me feel like a fraud, and I can't utter the words because I've lost the stomach to live in a way that isn't genuine. You're Dan, Mirai says. I turn my eyes on her, seeing her sunglasses dangle from her fingers, her hair pulled back in a tight, low ponytail. I love how she looks. She wears a black pencil skirt and a black jacket, a shiny black belt secured around her waist with high heels.
Our personal shopper, on the other hand, seems to think I'm still 12 in the dress they prepared for me. I'm covering it up with a long black coat, and since I have gloves on, Mirai must be talking about my face, the only visible skin. I nod.
Did you like it up there?
Yeah, I murmur. I liked them. The empty seat next to me weighs heavy, and I wish Jake was here. He offered, didn't he? I had to open my big mouth and refuse. I haven't eaten much since I arrived, either. The food here tastes different.
I spoke to him on the phone while you were there, Mirai tells me. Your uncle, I mean. I was afraid he'd be a jerk.
She laughs a little.
He had a real attitude.
I smile to myself, looking back out the window. Yeah, he does, I whisper. But I'm full of pride. I like him that way.
I invited them, she says. I offered to bring them out.
They'll never leave Colorado. Noah, maybe. Jake, unwillingly. And Caleb, I can't see him anywhere else. My breathing turns ragged as I think about what time it is there and what they're probably doing right now. Noah would be off doing his test runs, wasting way more time than he was allowed. And Jake will yell at him when he gets back before ordering him inside to help me with lunch. But no, I drop my eyes. I'm not in the kitchen. Noah will make lunch himself. Or run to town for cheeseburgers. I wonder if he got that stain off the seat. Knowing Noah, he just left it. He's so lazy about some things.
The Reverend will speak first, Mirai speaks up, followed by me, George Palmer, Cassidy Lee, and then Delmont Williams.
I sit back in my seat and look out the front windshield, past the driver, to see the hearse carrying my parents, first to the funeral, then to the crematorium. My throat swells.
The Reverend will then ask if anyone else would like to say something, she continues in a slow, soft voice. If you decide you want to speak, feel free to go ahead then, okay?
Her voice is like she's explaining this to a child, like she's afraid I'll wake up screaming if she's too loud.
You don't have to do that, I tell her. You don't have to talk like that. I'm not asleep.
She stares at me, drawing in a deep breath as her eyes start to glisten, and then she turns away so I won't see.
Do you remember your night terrors? She asks, staring out the window. We talked about them when you were little.
They came back in Colorado. I haven't told her that, and I won't.
It happened every night, she explains. We would wake you up, stop your screaming, and then put you back to sleep.
I vaguely remember it. I was so young. She swallows.
One night, I just waited for you to fall asleep, she says, and I crawled in next to you.
She looks back at me.
Nothing, no terrors, she tells me. And the next night, the same thing. No terrors when I slept with you.
My chin trembles, and I clench my jaw to stop it. A tear falls down her cheek as she can only manage a whisper.
You just needed what everyone needs, she tells me. A home.
I tighten my fists, trying to keep my breathing steady.
It's not a place, Tiernan. It's a feeling.
Her voice shakes.
Even when you grew out of the terrors, you still only managed 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night in that house. With them. That's why I wasn't upset when they sent you away to school, when you were only 11.
She sniffles, a sob escaping as she looks away.
Maybe, finally, you'd sleep.
The car stops and the door opens, Mirai quickly putting on her sunglasses and wiping tears away as she climbs out. It takes a moment to get my limbs moving. It's a feeling, not a place. I close my eyes a moment, feeling the sun on the peak on my face and my arms around my uncle as I sit behind him on the horse. I step out of the car, barely registering the cameras and the chatter from the reporters as I blindly follow Mirai up the steps of the church. People are talking to me, taking my hand and giving it a little hug with both of theirs, but I can't think. I don't feel good. Why did I come back? I thought I needed to do this. Be here. It's only right, right? I swallow, the sickness rising up my throat. People crowd us, all hungry for something, and even though I couldn't stomach opening up my social media when I got into town, it's clear my parents' suicide is still top news. Hell, some director is probably already pitching the story to a production company, so my parents' death can be lamented in some TV movie, where they'll be portrayed as perfect and in love from the moment they met. And me, their loving daughter, the product of their Shakespearean tragedy, will only be a significant character at the end, as I stand at their headstone and smile that they're finally safely together for all eternity. I take a seat in the front pew with Mirai. The only good part of all this is no one expects much from the grieving daughter, so I can sit quietly without looking weird for once. I close my eyes behind my glasses again. 2 days ago, I was making toys for the horses, milk jugs stuck with carrots and apples they could play with to get their treats. Were the jugs empty by now? Caleb doesn't care, and Noah probably wouldn't notice. I don't know when the funeral begins, but when Mirai nudges me and whispers in my ear, "Glasses," to remind me to remove my eyewear, I open my eyes and see the caskets in front of me. I take off my glasses, folding them gently and slipping them into my pocket. The speakers go up, one by one, over the next hour, telling stories I'd never heard and painting a picture of people I didn't know. I sit there, listening to Mirai talk about what a pleasure it was to be a part of their lives and support their work, while Cassidy, no double E, and Mr. Palmer tell stories of their youth and early careers, their charitable work a large part of the narrative the publicist probably asked them to push to remind people that how they left this world wasn't the most important thing. As Delmont, my father's closest friend, stands up there and talks about their college football days and summers backpacking in Turkey or Chile or wherever, Mirai puts her hand on mine to alert me it's almost time. My stomach churns. I could talk about their work, I guess, how they were an inspiration to me, and I could lie about all the cards and presents they surprised me with at school, even though it was Mirai, and I always knew it was her, even though she gave them the credit. I could talk about what I've learned from my uncle and cousins, and then say I learned it from my parents instead. I don't want to be quiet anymore. I want to prove to them that they didn't break me, that I won't let them affect my voice and my ability to be brave. But as I try to steady my feet under me to get ready to stand up, I can't. I don't want to lie. "Things change. Life moves on and the world with it," Delmont says. "But death, death is as sure as night." I look up at him, listening to his words. "It's a part of us all." He looks around at the audience as he starts to wrap up his speech. "The only thing we really leave behind is the work that we do and the people who love us." The people who love us. "Amelia and Hannes didn't leave anything on the table," he concludes. "They always knew the answer to the most important question in one's life. Where do I want to be today?" I stare at my parents' caskets, closed, so we all would remember them the way they were. And then the tears start falling down my cheeks, now after days. I hate them. I hate them, and I've wasted too much time hating them. This isn't where I want to be. "You loved each other." I wipe my tears, looking over at them and the words I couldn't muster before finally coming. "You were luckier than most. At least they had each other. You were capable of so much when it came to love." I drop my eyes, staring at my lap, my fists clenching around my coat. "And you considered what it would be like to live without love, because you decided not to live without each other. Did you consider what it was like for me, all these years, living without you? Tears fall silently, and everything is blurry. I close my eyes, all the years of anger rising up as I grit my teeth. I hate your house, I tell them in my head. I hate the stench of your perfume and your candles and your hairspray. I hate the feel of your clothes and the white walls, the white carpets and the white furniture. I try to calm my breathing. The library full of books that have never been opened and how nothing was ever warm. I hated you. I can't catch my breath. The air just feels too thick. I'm cold. I hate how I never told you any of this, how I never fought or said anything or called you out, how I never walked out to look in the world for what I needed, how I let you win, how I never let you know that you devastated me. That's where I wanted to be when they died. Standing. That's all I want. But I was too much of a coward to talk to you. I mouthed to myself, my tears now gone as I draw in a deep breath. Cowards always live to regret, because it's only too late that they realize the journey is filled with people who are afraid. They didn't have to walk alone.
Chapter 14. Noah. The chainsaw whirs outside and I sit up in bed, swinging my legs over the side. I run a hand through my hair. Will he fight me if I don't want to leave this fucking room today? Caleb ditched us and went hunting again yesterday, and Dad's barely said 3 words to me in the last 48 hours. Fun. It's like old times again. I shake my head and stand up, throwing on some jeans before leaving the room. I'm getting out of this house, out of this town. In the middle of the night, like a coward because I can't handle confrontation, but I'm leaving. Maybe he'll realize how fantastic I was once he doesn't have me to push around anymore, because he certainly won't get in Caleb's face. And maybe Caleb will finally utter a word when I'm not here to do all his talking for him. I can't do another winter with them. I'll go crazy. Heading downstairs, I walk into the kitchen and go straight for the coffee machine, seeing my dad step in from the shop. I grab a mug and then the pot, seeing it's empty just as he stops to refill his too. I sigh, my headache swelling more. He shoves his cup and stalks away. Make another pot. I cock an eyebrow but do as I'm told. How long has he been up? He throws a loaf of bread, some bacon he fried up, and a couple boxes of cereal on the table with the milk and butter, and I dump out the used coffee filter, replacing it with a clean one. Once the coffee grounds are loaded, I fill up the water container and start brewing, grabbing an Oreo from the package sitting on the counter. What am I doing today? More of the same, but there's always beer. I've got that to look forward to, at least now that I missed my window for the sponsorship with Delta Corps. And now that the house is fucking silent again because... He sits down, making himself a sandwich, and I plop down across from him, taking a bite of the cookie. But at the taste, my stomach immediately rolls. I force the bite down, but toss the rest of the cookie onto the table. I feel like shit. This fucking sucks, I grumble. I miss her. We all miss her, even Caleb too, I think. He came home 24 hours ago with some waterfowl, found her gone, and left again soon after, disappearing into the woods again for another whole damn day. I miss coming downstairs and seeing lights on. Girls like it cozy and warm. I liked that touch she added to the house. And seeing her outside or in the barn or padding around barefoot in our kitchen. The house felt good. Even her pissy moods amused me. The front door opens and Caleb walks in, tearing off his shirt, bloody from whatever he's stocking our freezer with for the winter. I can almost see Tiernan holding the back of her hand to her mouth, looking like she was about to throw up every time she saw him like that. My heart aches a little. Just go get her, I tell my father, but I don't look at him. Caleb fills up a glass with water and I wait for the argument from my dad because there's no merit in anything I think or say. He never listens, just responds in the exact opposite of whatever I want, She's dealing with the death of her parents, he says, swallowing his food. She's an adult. I can't tell her what to do. She's not an adult, I retort. Her place is here. It's your say, not hers. He sits back in his chair, dropping his sandwich to his plate. I know what he's thinking. I sound fucking crazy. Would I really want him to drag her back here, kicking and screaming? No. Maybe. The funeral was only yesterday, he tells me. She might still come back. Yeah, right. We fought with her like assholes, and she took no time to decide to leave. Why would she come back? I wouldn't. I reach over and pick up the juice, uncapping the container and lifting it to my mouth. But then a door slams upstairs, and I hear a creak of the floorboards. I freeze, locking eyes with my dad. His eyes narrow. Did you have someone over last night? He asks me. No. I lower the juice, both of us training our ears. Maybe Caleb had someone. But before I can finish the thought, we hear footfalls on the stairs and all turn our heads, seeing Tiernan swing around the banister, dressed in baggy jean shorts, my t-shirt, hair a mess, and sunglasses, shielding her from the morning light as she hugs herself against the chill in the air. What the fuck?
Morning,
she says through a yawn. I shoot up out of my chair, gaping at her as she brushes past the table to the coffee machine. Morning, I burst out. Where did you come from? She just strolls in like she never left. Is this a dream? When did you get in? My dad asks before she can answer me. She pushes her sunglasses back on her head, yawning again. Caleb stares down at her as she stands next to him, pouring a cup of coffee.
Last night, she replies.
How did you get here from the airport?
Uber,
she tells him. You came back, I say, still stunned as my heart pounds. She's really here? Like she was in her room this whole fucking time I was pouting down here? She turns her head over her shoulder, looking at both of us like we're idiots. She definitely won't handle a hug right now.
Can someone look at the shift on the tractor? She asks, changing the subject. It's sticking, and the vacuum, it's way, way too loud.
She pours a little cream in her coffee and stirs.
Just because y'all build motorcycles does not mean everything on this property needs to be rewired to sound like a muscle car.
She picks up her cup and starts to walk out of the room.
I'll handle Bernadette, feed the horses and dogs, and pick all the tomatoes before I get started on breakfast,
she tells us.
Would someone mind bringing a load of wood up to my room sometime today? It's getting too cold at night.
She leaves the room, heading back upstairs, and I stare at my dad, my mouth hanging open a little.
I'm not feeding you until the stalls are done and Shawnee's had her workout,
she yells as she climbs the stairs.
Let's go!
My dad's eyes go wide and he pops out of his chair, stuffing the last piece of bacon in his mouth as I laugh, downing a huge gulp of orange juice before rushing out of the kitchen. Yes, ma'am. I finish putting a blanket over the mare and run my hand down her head, between the eyes, before closing the gate and scurrying out of the barn. I shiver. Shit, it got chilly. The sun dipped behind the peak an hour ago, and while it's not quite dark, I'm missing its warmth. Grabbing my sweatshirt draped over the logs, I pull it over my head, fixing my hat again. Tiernan! I shout, watching her step out of the greenhouse and yank the hose back over to the side. Let's get drunk! She flashes me a small smile and I inhale, smelling the steaks on the grill. She jogs up the steps of the house, her rain boots covered in dried mud from the last time she wore them, and I run after her, both of us heading around the deck to the back of the house. I grab two beers out of the tub, swiping off the ice and untwisting the tops. I hand one to her as we stop next to my dad.
It's chilly.
She bounces up and down. I pull off my sweatshirt and hand it to her. She's already wearing my old blue and white flannel, but she doesn't argue. Taking the navy-colored pullover, she slips it on and takes the extra beer I offer. Never too cold to grill, my dad points out. She smiles.
It smells good. I'm starving.
He loads the steaks on a plate. I take the grilled corn, and Tiernan runs inside to grab the macaroni salad and potato chips. We set everything down on the picnic table in the shop, the doors open, and the music playing as the evening air grows crisper. The beer lulls my veins, and I polish off the bottle as I reach behind me and grab the bottle of Patron off the work table. I pour us each a shot,
handing one to Tiernan. No, she says, setting the condiments on the table.
Yes, I nod, placing it next to her plate. We're getting fucked up.
Caleb walks over, taking a seat, and I throw back my shot, blowing a breath at the burn. I slam the glass down and let out a yelp as it hits my stomach, leaping around the table, scooping Tiernan up and flipping her over my shoulder.
Because she's ours all winter!
I spin around, hearing her squeal.
Noah!
She barks. But I laugh anyway. Thank fuck this day is ending better than it started. I might have actually had to stand up for myself and walk out of here for good. Having her around will make this house bearable. She makes my dad bearable.
For Christ's sake, sit down, Dad orders. Eat like a family.
I put her back on her feet, chuckling and pushing her down in her chair. Popping another beer, I watch as her eyes lock in on the tequila and she cocks an eyebrow. Come on. My father never drinks enough to get drunk, and Caleb could drink my weight in Jack, Jim, and Jose together and still not feel anything. She takes a deep breath and picks up the glass as my dad doles out the steak and she tips it back, swallowing the entire shot in one gulp. And without training wheels. Good girl. I refill my glass and then hers.
Stop.
She holds out her hand.
I don't need to be puking.
Tell you what,
I say as she scoops out salad onto our plates.
I'll make you a bet. If I clean my plate of all my food before you, you have to do 2 more shots.
She looks at the T-bone on her plate that's bigger than her face.
And if I clean mine first?
She asks.
Then I'll do 2 shots.
You were going to do 2 shots anyway.
I snort.
Yes, true. I'll do your laundry this week, I offer.
No one else touches my underwear, thank you.
Yeah, that's clear as day.
Her eyes bug out, and my father breaks into a quiet laugh, he and her sharing a quick glance right before he shuts up. She purses her lips and glares at me.
Okay, okay, I say, getting serious. If you clean your plate first, I have breakfast duty for the rest of the week.
She ponders it for a moment, and then nods once.
Deal.
I pick up my steak knife and fork, seeing we both have the same cut of meat and the same scoop of macaroni salad. Her hands remain in her lap.
Ready?
She asks.
You don't need utensils?
She shakes her head, an unsettling smirk on her face.
Nope.
Okay, you're so doing these 2 shots.
Go! I yell. I shove in a mouthful and look over, seeing her take her plate and set it on the ground.
Huh?
I freeze, watching Danny and Johnny scarf up everything on her plate, one taking the steak and the other tearing off half as they both escape to a corner to savor their spoils.
What the fuck? That wasn't the deal,
I blurt out, food nearly falling out of my mouth.
You said I had to clean my plate.
You, I reiterate, you had to clean the plate.
Semantics.
She takes a swig of her beer, a look of self-satisfaction on her face.
That was your dinner, honey, Dad warns her.
She shrugs.
Saving calories for breakfast in the morning.
And then she looks at me.
Pancakes, please, with sausage and toast.
She laughs, and I growl under my breath. At least I can still do her 2 shots. We sit and eat, Tiernan picking a sweet pickle out of the little bowl and biting into it.
Snow's coming soon, Dad tells us, lifting his beer as he looks at Tiernan. We'll hit town a couple more times, maybe get you some low-key attire of your own that fits. She can wear my shirt.
I chew my food.
I've got plenty. She's drowning in it.
And then he looks at her again.
We'll find some jeans that fit and don't cost $300.
$300? I arch a brow at her.
What the hell possesses you?
She scowls and opens her mouth to snap back at me, but then she stops, pausing as she notices Caleb putting a new plate in front of her and scraping off half his steak, already cut up into bite-sized chunks. He doesn't make eye contact and goes back to eating and drinking as if nothing happened. She searches for her words.
Thank you.
I roll my eyes and take a drink of my beer. I should have thought of that. It takes her a minute to remember where we were, but then she glares at me again.
First of all, she says, my family's personal shopper buys my clothes, or bought my clothes, and second of all, they look good.
You don't need to look good, my father interjects. Looking good around here ends you up married and pregnant at 18.
Your sons definitely know what a condom is, and so do I.
I snort.
Besides, she adds, I haven't had a single boyfriend. When I've had three, then you can worry about me ending up pregnant and married.
Three? I mumble over my food. She hesitates, looking like she'd rather not explain herself.
My mother said no woman should get married until they've had at least three.
She waves her hand as if I know how to finish that sentence. Three? My father prompts her.
Lovers, she blurts out. Boyfriends, whatever.
I pinch my eyebrows together. What the hell are you talking about? She lets out a sigh, straightening her spine and looking visibly uncomfortable. Finally, she takes the ketchup, Heinz sauce, and A1 bottle, moving them one next to the other.
Lust, learn, and love,
she says, placing the condiments and touching her finger to the ketchup.
My mother said the first boy, or man, is a crush. You think you love them, but what you really love is how they make you feel. It's not love, it's lust. Lust for attention, lust for danger, lust to feel special.
She looks between us.
You're needy with number one. Needy for someone to love you.
My father forgets the food he's chewing as he gapes at her.
The second is to learn about yourself.
She touches the Heinz.
Your first crush has been crushed. You're sad. But most of all, you're angry. Angry enough to not let it happen again, she explains. To not give yourself over so much this time. To not give up your power to be his booty call at midnight and there waiting whenever he decides to show up.
She's describing us, I take it.
Number two is where you finally learn what you're capable of, she continues,
tucking a loose strand from her ponytail behind her ear.
You start getting demanding. You grow bold, not afraid to start calling some shots. You're also not afraid to be greedier in the bedroom, because it's about what you want and not what he wants. Number two is to be used, in a way.
My dad clears his throat, and I laugh to myself as I drop my fork and give her my full attention. She said bedroom. What the fuck did she teach you? He mumbles. But I want her to keep going. And number three? I ask, picking up the A1.
Love.
She snatches the bottle away.
When the lessons of your weakness with number one and your selfishness with number two sink in, and you find a medium. When you know who you are and you're ready to welcome everything he is, and you're not afraid anymore.
She puts the bottle back in its place.
You still might not have a happy ending, but you'll engage in a healthy relationship and handle yourself in a way you're proud of.
And you think your mother is the one to listen to? Dad replies.
She was a failure as a mother, Tiernan points out. But nothing else. It's the only advice she ever gave me, actually, so I kind of hang on to it.
It actually isn't terrible advice. I'm so glad I didn't marry my first, or my fifth. People learn about themselves through sex. It's true. And sometimes it may take a lot of living to become the person you want to be. I'm happy my future wife won't have to experience the complete prick I was at 17. I was much worse. Like, a lot worse. Well, sounds like you already know what you need to know, my dad tells her. Why go through three men to get it?
Some lessons can't be taught, she says,
taking a bite of the steak Caleb gave her.
Just learned, don't you think?
I watch in amusement as he can't fucking respond because she's right. Sometimes people have to make their own mistakes and feel the pain. She takes the empty beer and stands up.
Anyway, nothing to worry about, she assures him. I have zero interest in relationship drama, and even if I did, we'll be deep in snow for months very soon. The perfect chastity belt.
She walks over to the garbage, tossing her empty bottle and reaching into the fridge to grab another. Our eyes follow, barely breathing as we watch her lean over in her $300 jeans to find a new bottle. I shift in my seat, the sudden bulge between my legs swelling. Yeah, I murmur sarcastically as I lift my bottle to my lips. Because there's no danger here whatsoever. Dad shoots me a look. Pretty sure he knows by now that it's going to be a long fucking winter.
Chapter 15. Tiernan. What's this? I dart my eyes up to Noah before taking the bag he's handing me. We've been running to town every chance we get over the past few weeks, anticipating the end of our cheeseburger and milkshake runs. I also needed to hit the pharmacy today to stock up on everything under the sun that can remedy what might hit me up on the peak this winter, when I won't be able to go to town for what ails me. I'm prepared for headaches, sinus issues, joint pain, back pain, cramps, allergies. Not that I currently have those, but you never know. And I'm about to be all stocked up on my birth control. I debated going off, but I guess it's just best to stay on my routine. He shrugs. I've never gotten a girl a birthday present, he says as I peer into the bag. If you don't like it, you don't have to wear it. I reach in, pulling out a t-shirt and baseball cap. We stand in the corner of the store, waiting for my script to be filled, and I set the bag on the floor, fanning out the shirt. It's light blue with the town's emblem on the breast, and I turn it over, seeing the same Vanderburg Extreme logo covering the whole back. It's just like Noah's, only his is white. I grin. Is this your way of telling me you want your clothes back? Just thought you might like something that fits you a little bit. He pauses, rethinking. Actually, my clothes look pretty good on you. I just thought you'd like something new is all. Yeah, I love it. I don't have many t-shirts of my own. Just school ones, and those don't have good memories, so this one will be fun to wear. I look at the burgundy-colored cap with the word WILD written in cursive. It was either that or Diva, he says. I laugh and pull it onto my head, peering at him under the bill. I am a diva, I allow, but I'd rather be a wild diva. I reach in, wrapping one arm around his neck for a quick hug. Thanks. I pull away, but his arm is around my waist, holding me to him for a real hug. I falter, taken back. But then I tighten my embrace. It feels good, hugging someone who doesn't want to pull away first. My mom calls me sometimes, he says, his voice low and pained. My dad doesn't know. I back up, releasing him so I can look in his eyes. Not sure why I'm telling you. His voice is quiet. She wants money in her commissary account. I watch him, listening. No one talks about her. I don't even know why she's in jail. And I put the money in her account because I let myself enjoy the idea for a moment that she needs me. He gives me a sad smile, looking so solemn, so serious. Not Noah. Even though I know I'm just the first person she assumes she can take advantage of, she knows my dad won't talk to her, that Caleb can't talk to her. Noah can't talk to Jake. I gathered that much in my first week here. He doesn't have anyone in that house to really connect to. I never really saw that before. I wish she was dead. Noah stares at the floor, but then looks up at me. I wish she was dead because then I could love her. I stare at him, and he stares at me, both of us barely breathing, but calm. He steps closer. Would you rather be used than never thought of at all? Would you rather be never thought of at all or used? I throw back. Even now, I'm not sure. At least his mother knows he exists and can put on a show of love, even if it's fake. But then, at least my parents didn't lie to me. They didn't toy with me or jerk me around. I always knew where I stood. Who had it worse, him or me? Try the shirt on before we leave, Noah says. I blink at the sudden change in subject. He steps closer, a hardness in his eyes that wasn't there a moment ago, as he backs me up farther into the corner. I don't want it too tight, he explains. He hovers, his body an inch from mine as he looks down at me. What? Here? My eyes flash to the store around us. Noah, I'm really glad you're here, he whispers, cutting me off. I'm glad you came back. Why do you want me here so much? Why not? I study his eyes. Because when you leave, I won't be wherever you go. He falls silent, but his gaze doesn't leave mine. He wants to leave here so badly, and he will, eventually. Eventually, I'll leave too. He doesn't need me. He needs a life raft. Looking around and not seeing anyone around us, I shield myself between him and the corner as I pull off his old t-shirt I'm wearing and hand it to him. Refitting my cap, I slip my arms through the new one, his eyes on me making my skin tingle as I avoid his gaze. My bra covers more than a bikini, and I'm still in my jeans. Overall, I'm much more dressed than I was at the lake all those weeks ago when they took me fishing. But with my hair hanging in two scraggly braids, a baseball hat, and dirt under my fingernails for the first time in my life, I've never felt this pretty. How he looks at me. How Jake looks at me. How Caleb refuses to look at me, but I know he's aware of my every move when we're in the same room. The skin of my breasts, only half covered in my hot pink bra, burns with fire under Noah's gaze, and I pull the shirt on over my head, feeling Noah's hands brush my arms as he reaches up to help pull it down over my body. I fix my hat again, his fingers still gripping the hem below my hips. I'm afraid to meet his eyes, but I can feel the heat rolling off him. The local guys don't talk to you, he orders in a raspy voice. They don't touch you tonight. Do you understand? I nod, still not meeting his gaze. My heart pumps so hard it hurts, but my stomach is flipping like I'm riding a roller coaster. He finally releases me and backs up. It looks nice. What does? Oh, the shirt, right. Tiernan, someone calls, and I dart past him to get my prescription. Anything to get away. Hours later, I'm twirling in my room, smiling as my new summer dress fans out along with my hair. It's too cold to wear this tonight, but I'm going to anyway. After seeing it on sale in a shop earlier, I got an itch to clean under my fingernails and put on some makeup for my birthday dinner, since this could very well be the last time we hit town. A storm is coming. U2's Dancing Barefoot plays, and I move, closing my eyes and running my hands up under my hair. My homework is desperately late. I have missed calls, probably birthday wishes from Mirai and friends of my parents, and my shipment of paperbacks to get me through the winter is delayed in Denver. But I deleted all my social media, and I'm now a legal adult, completely in charge of where I can go and what I can do. So any weight on my shoulders feels a lot lighter now. I'm actually excited, even though the guys are busy dreading the boring coming months. I spin and spin, but then I spot a figure out of the corner of my eye and stumble to a stop, seeing Caleb standing in the hallway. He looks like he just came down from his room, paused in the middle of pulling on his t-shirt as he watches me. My pulse quickens. It's unsettling to have his attention, because I'm never sure what he's thinking, but I always feel like it's not good. Stalking over, I kick the door shut, smiling to myself as I pick up my heels and sit on the bed, sliding my feet in. I feel great, and I'm not letting him ruin my night. Carter, my parents' security, is taking care of the house back in LA. Mirai and our lawyers are handling all of my parents' estate business, and for the first time in my life, I get to be a kid tonight. Smiling, laughing, playing, being around people who care about me. It seems weird that I finally get that on the day I become an adult, but I won't analyze it. I'm taking it. Buckling up my Louboutins, a Christmas gift from my parents last year, courtesy of Mirai, of course, set with pretty crystals and 5-inch heels, I grab a cream-colored shawl to go over my dark pink dress and head out of the room. Caleb is long gone, and I carry the shawl as I fluff up my loose curls and smooth out my dress. It's simple and innocent, but totally not me. Backless and short, falling mid-thigh, it has a deep cleavage and spaghetti straps. My heels clack on the wooden stairs, and I walk through the living room, seeing the guys around the table as I set my shawl and phone down and go for my purse. Digging out my license and cash, I turn and hand it to my uncle. "Would you hold this in your wallet?" I ask. It saves me from carrying a bag. But he just looks at me, kind of scowling. "What?" I say.
"You're overdressed."
I tisk, giving him a coy smile as I stuff my card and money in his hand. "There's no such thing." Of course, compared to them, I am overdressed. They're all in jeans, Noah double-fisting Budweisers.
"People don't dress like that here,"
Jake points out, and he really didn't need to say that. It's not like I haven't noticed. "I don't fit in anywhere," I tell him. "I'm used to it." "Seriously, I feel good. Stop hyperventilating." He cocks an eyebrow and turns away, and I can see Noah's concerned gaze flash to his. Jake finally shoves a large package over to me, exquisitely wrapped in silver paper with a big silver bow. I reach for it. "What's this?" It's a weird shape. But all he says is,
"Open it."
The paper looks just as pretty as everything under my Christmas trees growing up, and I can't help but feel the smile I'm wearing. I know he knows what's inside, which means he picked it out. Hell, he might have even wrapped it, too. I rip the paper, tearing it off in large sheets and picking at the scraps until the whole thing comes into view, and I look at the compound bow with a pink camouflage pattern and six arrows. I pick it up. Wow.
"Do you know how to shoot it?"
my uncle asks. "A little." I fist the grip and draw the band back, aiming toward the fridge. I haven't used one in a long time. And I've never used a compound bow. They didn't have these at camp.
"Noah set up a target in the barn," he tells me. "You can practice before we take it out hunting."
I drop my arms and look at him. "Hunting?" They all stand silent, and I gaze around at them as if there was a stipulation in my contract for living here that I missed. "I don't think I want to do that." I set the bow down on the table. "I'll cook the meat. I'm not supplying it, though." But Noah just laughs, and Jake shakes his head.
"We'll talk about it," he says.
"Just as long as it's not today." "Well, thank you." I give him a peck on the cheek. "I really love it." He nods once, but won't meet my eyes. He clears his throat.
"I'll go warm up the truck."
I grab my wrap and swing it around my shoulders. An Aran Island sweater from Mirai to keep me warm this winter, a shirt and hat to help me blend in with the locals, and a new toy, better than any birthday so far. But as I move to follow Jake, Caleb steps in front of me, stopping me. I look up. He pauses a moment before he reaches into his back pocket and pulls out a long strap of dark brown leather. I narrow my eyes as he offers it to me. The horn outside honks, but we stay, Noah approaching my side. "What's this?" I reach out and take it, threading it through my hand and turning it over.
"He makes them," Noah says.
It's a belt, dark and tanned with carvings in the leather and an antique-looking silver buckle. I study the etchings. There are trees, a waterfall, the peak, the view from my bedroom window, actually, something that looks like a braid of hair, a horse, and a dream catcher. I swallow. Why would he put a dream catcher on there? But it is beautiful. He made this himself. Then I notice something else, and I chuckle. The notches go all the way to the buckle, I point out. I'm flattered, but my waist isn't that small. Noah leans in, whispering, "But your wrists are." My heart skips, and I dart my eyes up to Caleb as he stares down at me. "What?" But Noah just laughs, both of them leaving me there as they head outside. And I don't realize I'm staring back down at the belt spacing off until Jake honks again, making me jump.
"Give it to me," I shout as Noah holds my phone out of my reach. "Come on."
He plants his hand on my forehead and pushes me back as we sit at the table and he inspects the photo.
"Holy shit,"
he says loud enough for everyone around us to hear.
"Why do you hide this?"
I launch up and snatch the phone out of his hand, plopping back down in my seat.
"Because it's a dumb picture."
"Then why do you keep it on your phone?"
"Because," I tell him, "it's the only thing I've done that I'm proud of."
I go to exit out of the link to the one article about me ever written, along with the photo shoot the magazine insisted be done to accompany it. But Jake plucks my cell out of my hands instead, taking his turn to look at the pic. I glare, opening my big mouth to protest, but I decide against it, casting a worried glance around at the other families trying to have a peaceful meal in the steakhouse. It was my fault, showing it to Noah in the first place. Last spring, Vanity Fair did an expose on the Children of the Stars and featured me in their collection. Unfortunately, a photo shoot came with the territory, one shot in particular of me in my French braids, a sports bra, and some lacrosse gear. I looked sweaty and dirty, but kinda sexy, and even though the entire thing was a lie, concocted by my parents' publicists to make me look and sound incredible, I really liked the experience, even though I'd never played lacrosse in my life. It was the one time I felt large. Yes, the article was bullshit about how involved I was in school. Nothing was true in regard to my activism and hobbies, and I only got the feature because of my parents. I hated the idea when they made me do it. The photo shoot, though, I felt pretty, even if I felt stupid after it was over.
"It's a great picture. We'll put it up on the website," Noah tells his father, and then lifts his arms, knife and fork in hand, as he recites the words on an imaginary header. "The new addition to Vanderburg Extreme."
I roll my eyes, turning my attention to Jake.
"Give it to me."
He passes it to Caleb, who takes it and barely glances at it before handing it to Noah.
"Now," I grit through my teeth, trying to keep our banter down. I only meant to brag about how I've worn less in public than I am tonight, when Jake got snippy about my backless dress again at dinner. I didn't want them gawking at me in my bra, though, in public.
Glasses and silverware clank in the rustic old restaurant, and the smell of barbecue sauce and French fries fills the air, making my nose sting from time to time. The steak was overcooked, the Coke is watered down, and the floor is so greasy I can spell my name on it with the heel of my shoe. But I wouldn't have anything different for my 18th birthday. I've had more fun already tonight than I did in all my past birthdays combined. Noah hands the phone back to me and I take it, turning it off and sticking it under my thigh so they can't get it again.
"So, what do you say?" he asks. "Wanna look sexy like that on our website?"
"Shut up." I tuck my chair back in and take a sip of my soda.
"It's a really good idea," Noah argues, turning to his father. "That's what we're missing in our marketing, something pretty." "Noah, Jesus."
Jake shifts uncomfortably in his chair and lifts his bottle to his lips.
"No, seriously," he continues. "Look at all the other sites, all the shows and expos we go to. What do they all have in common? Hot girls. We could get a photographer up at the house and do a photo shoot of her on the bikes. It'll be great."
"It'll be snowing by morning," Jake says. "No photographers are getting up the mountain."
He shoots his eyes to me. "And no one's getting down." I pause, a shiver almost running through me as I hold my uncle's eyes. I'm not sure if I see a warning or a challenge there in regard to the months ahead, but I raise my glass in a cheers, ready for whatever. Jake grins, raising his beer, and Noah follows, all of us clinking our glasses together. Caleb eats his meal.
"Besides," Jake adds, setting his beer down, "we may never see her again after the spring anyway. Not sure we want to add her to the letterhead quite yet."
I shake my head, knowing he wouldn't mind if I stayed forever and would love the assurance right now that I will. I love being wanted. But college looms. I'll need to make decisions soon. Noah looks at me.
You won't leave us, will you?
I laugh, unsure how to answer that. Instead, I just tip my chin at my uncle. May I have a non-virgin beer for my birthday? He knows full well I'm taking advantage of the allowance in this state that anyone under 21 can drink on private property, as long as they're under parental supervision. So let's go home to private property so I can do that. But Jake has different plans.
Let's go into the bar, he says.
My eyes widen, and I'm out of my chair before any of them. Noah, Caleb, and I head out of the restaurant while Jake pays the bill, and Noah takes my hand as we trail down a long hallway, entering the noise-ridden saloon that's connected to the restaurant. Country music plays on the jukebox, and I crunch peanut shells under my shoes as we walk under the dim lights and past the pool tables and bar stools. Eyes immediately turn in our direction as people huddle in small groups and the music blares. I suddenly feel overdressed like Jake suggested. A few interested pairs of eyes floated up and down my attire as we sat down in the restaurant earlier, because I haven't met many people in town and they probably wondered who I was. But now, my skin warms under their gazes, and I clutch Noah's hand, a little uncomfortable. The place is filled with t-shirts, jeans, and beards, and who's the moron coming in here dressed for a cocktail party in Malibu? I meet several pairs of eyes as we pass tables of people drinking and smoking. Caleb tosses some money on the bar and gestures to all of us at the bartender, but the guy cocks his head, eyeing me with suspicion.
It's okay, Mike,
I hear my uncle suddenly say behind me. I turn around, seeing him give the guy a smile, and that seems to do it, because the bartender nods and reaches down to pull four buds out of the cooler, popping the tops for all of us.
Let's go.
Noah nudges my arm. I follow them all, except for Caleb because he disappeared once he got his beer, over to the foosball table, and Noah and I pair up against Jake. I ignore the eyes I feel on my back and take a sip of my beer before setting it down on the table with Noah's and Jake's. They played this on the Karate Kid, right? Jake's eyes light up.
Very good.
I almost laugh at his delighted expression. Seems there's still hope for me yet. We play a few games, Jake winning every time despite being by himself, and I have to pull my hair over my shoulder to get it off my back by the time we finish the third game, because I'm starting to sweat. The music in here isn't my style usually, but the crowd feeds off it, loud and happy, and I barely even notice the cold gusts of wind that rush through the front door every time someone arrives or leaves. Some old-timer walks through, dusting snow off his hat, but nothing disturbs the good time.
I'm gonna grab another one,
Jake tells us after the last game, gesturing to his beer. I pick up mine still sitting on the table, untouched, and look around the room as he walks off. Some racers sit off to the back, and I recognize a few of the guys and girls from the group at my uncle's house a couple times, and I spot a woman in a cheap little veil, surrounded by others at the bar, all of them throwing back shots. Her tight black t-shirt reads, Marissa's Last Stand, in blingy jewels that sparkle in the dim light. The song on the jukebox ends, and a few couples nestled on a small patch of floor, who are dancing, let go of each other and make their way back to their tables.
Wanna play some pool?
Noah shouts over the noise. I stare at the jukebox, bringing the bottle to my lips. I want to play some music, I tell him, and flash him an apologetic smile as I hold out my hand for money. Please? He rolls his eyes but reaches into his pocket and digs out some ones for me. Jake has my money. Noah knows I'm good for it. He hands me a couple bills and I snatch them up. Thank you. Strolling off, I head for the music. Jake stands at the bar, talking to some guy, and I still haven't seen Caleb since we got in here. I stop at the jukebox and look around for him. Caleb has barely spared me a glance since he gave me the belt earlier tonight, but something about his present keeps gnawing at me, and I'm not sure why. He made it, by hand, for me. He knew my birthday was coming. I love that each of them put some thought into what I might like, even though they really didn't have to get me anything at all. It was nice opening up a gift I would buy for myself, instead of a lavish present that tries way too hard to put a price on impressing someone. Caleb put in hours of work, though. The thought of him in his workroom in the barn, quietly working, head hung over my belt, out there alone all that time, for me. But then I shake my head. I'm overanalyzing. He probably had that belt already made and laying around. He just grabbed it as he was leaving his room, and it probably does have some weirdo sexual undertone with all those notches, like Noah said. I scroll the song selections, finally sing something not country, and put in a bill, dialing in the letter and number. "Do You Want to Touch Me There" by Joan Jett starts playing, and all of a sudden some cheers go off. I turn my head over my shoulder to see the bachelorette party holding up their arms and moving toward me, already dancing. I smile, ready to move out of the way, but they start screaming the words, one of them taking my hand and pulling me in with them. I laugh, unsure of what to do. I look around for my uncle or Noah to rescue me, but in a moment I'm trapped and can't see anyone. All of us crowd the small area, and I barely have room to move as everyone jumps, sways, and rocks out, the wooden floor underneath us taking a beating. Others close their eyes, and after a few moments, I take a deep breath and do the same, letting the music and people feed me. My head reels. I've always been awkward with other women. Always. I'm either worried they'll feel they have to hold my hand in social situations, or aggravated because they do. I hate being an albatross around their necks or being treated like an ignorant little sister they need to take under their wing. This isn't like that, though. I just have to dance. I sing along with the song, flip my hair, and move my body to the music, laughing with them and feeling the energy buzz on every inch of my skin. If I had to talk to these girls, it would be a challenge, but for now, I can enjoy the music. Lifting up my arms, I bang my head to the lyrics, unashamed of going crazy because so is everyone else, and I relax. Finally, I relax. Until I open my eyes. Jake stands paused in the middle of raising his beer to his mouth, watching me at the bar. His lips are parted slightly, and he looks like he isn't breathing. My heart drops into my stomach, and I slow for a moment, taking a mental inventory to make sure he's not mad. I'm not dancing with a local boy. I'm not naked. I came with 3 male relatives, so I'm not unarmed or unprotected. He's not angry, I don't think. He's just watching me. A flutter hits my stomach. Shifting my gaze, I see Noah at the pool table with some buddies, taking a shot of something brown, his eyes immediately turning back over to me as if he's been keeping an eye out the whole time. His gaze is soft, but his lips are tight. A smile tugs at my mouth, but I don't let it out. The bride-to-be wraps an arm around my waist, and I hang my arm over another woman's shoulder, and we sing and dance. But every smile I wear is for someone else. Everything I do, I hope Jake sees, and every move I make, I hope Noah is watching. I love their attention. As the song ends, I laugh with the girls, all of us dispersing as a slow tune starts, and I turn around to head to my uncle at the bar. But as soon as I spin around, someone is there. And I look up to see Terrence Holcomb.
"Hey, California," he says, slipping his hands to my waist.
I start to push him away. "Off." Jake wouldn't lie about that clubhouse this guy keeps. I don't want anything to do with him.
"You've met my friend?" he asks.
"Huh?" At that moment, someone comes up behind me, and I turn my head to see Cece at my back. She holds my hips, too, laying her chin on my shoulder. They're friends? How does that work with Caleb in the picture?
I fight their hold, trying not to make a scene, but every time I get loose, they reclaim their hold again. I look around for Jake or Noah, but we're surrounded by people all of a sudden. Lots of people. Men. What the hell? All the ladies on the dance floor are gone, now replaced with Holcomb's motocross buddies. Realization dawns. We're being surrounded by cover, so Jake and Noah can't see. What if I told you that Caleb did hit me in the cave that day? Cece says behind me. Would you still want to spend the winter locked up on the peak with him? I pause, stunned. What? And what if I told you? Cece continues, tracing the spaghetti strap of my dress. That he can't wait to make you bleed, too, and he's just biding his time until you have no means of escaping him. My mouth goes dry, and my skin crawls. Caleb. Caleb isn't like that. Holcomb shakes his head, smirking.
They warned you about me, didn't they? He says. You should have been warned about them. They only wanted you because you're rich and beautiful. Think of what your money will do for Vanderburg Extreme and what your body will do in their beds.
I shake my head. No.
Noah won't need a sponsor, Holcomb goes on. He'll have you. More money than the rest of us could ever raise, and he won't have to jump through hoops to get it, because you love him and you'll let him have anything he wants.
No. None of them have touched you then? Cece asks. I clench my teeth, but the wheels turn anyway, remembering Caleb and me on the hood of the car and Jake and me in the kitchen.
You haven't felt threatened? Holcomb presses. Not once.
If you had been dancing with a man like that in public, I would have taken you over my knee. I breathe hard and shallow, recalling my uncle's threat all those weeks ago. Cece probably heard him when he pulled me away and told Terrence.
And now you're 18, Terrence adds. Perfectly legal in all 50 states, just in time for the snow.
Words lodge in my throat, and I yank my arms free of them. They don't really like you, Cece tells me. You're useful, just like the rest of us who service them. She rubs circles on my belly as her head remains on my shoulder. And when they fuck you pregnant, they'll control you and your bank account forever. No, they're my home. The peak is my home.
Stay with us, Holcomb whispers, getting closer. Come home with me.
Tears pool as they sandwich me, and as Holcomb dips his mouth into my neck, I start to cry out. No! But just then, a hand wraps around my waist and yanks me free of them. I gasp, stumbling off the dance floor and right into Caleb as he pulls me into his body. He brings me in, my forehead meeting his, and I look up at him through my watery eyes. He presses his lips hard to my forehead, and I still for a moment. Caleb. Holcomb and Cece's words swirl in my head, but as Caleb's warmth washes over me, everything they said starts to fade away, more and more, until there's nothing but him. I exhale, closing my eyes. They're not my parents. This is real. They care about me, and they want me here. Caleb draws back, our foreheads meeting again as he looks down into my eyes, unblinking. Swiping his thumbs under my eyes, he dries my tears. I go to assure him that I'm okay, but before I can, he drops his hands, his gaze turning dark, and he shoves me behind him before lunging for Holcomb. Grabbing him by the neck, he throws Terrence into the jukebox, knocking into other people on the dance floor in the process. I wince, watching the guy hit the machine, the glass case cracking. All hell breaks loose. Motocross guys go after Caleb, a bottle crashes to the floor, and a group of women gets pushed into a table, the legs scraping across the floor. Caleb! I cry. Cece takes her opportunity while he's distracted, shoving me in the chest,
and I stumble back, my eyes burning with anger. Noah grabs my hand and yanks me away, my eyes burning into hers as she disappears in the crowd. He pulls me across the bar, and I look back at the pit of brawlers on the dance floor, not seeing Caleb anywhere. Do they have him on the floor or something? The bartender leaps over the bar with a baseball bat, and Jake takes me from Noah as Noah runs back for his brother.
Are you okay?
Jake asks. I nod quickly, too worried about the boys. I can't even say someone else started it. Caleb technically made the first move. His kiss still warms my forehead.
Get in the truck.
Jake shoves his keys at me and pushes me toward the door. I step backward, the music stopped, and bystanders watching the fight. My heart hammers in my chest, feeling like this is my fault for some reason, but I know it's not. If I weren't here, though. Jake digs through the fray, finding his sons, and I spin around, running outside to our truck parked on the curb. Snow falls, fat flakes hitting my hair and bare shoulders, and I rip off my heels, jogging across the frigid, wet pavement to the truck. Climbing in, I toss my heels in the back and start the engine. I shiver, turning on the heaters and starting the wipers. Thankfully, the windows haven't frosted yet, and I blow into my hands, trying to warm them up. I left my shawl inside, damn it. The door to the bar flies open, and I look over, seeing Caleb charge out, followed quickly by his father and brother. He heads around the truck for the driver's side. Are you okay? I ask as he opens the door, but I know I won't get an answer. Pushing me over, he climbs in and shifts the truck into first as Jake takes the seat next to me and Noah climbs in the back. I take the hint and scurry into the back seat to join him. The bar door opens again and guys rush out, Terrence leading the pack, and I barely have time to look at Caleb before he shifts gears again, putting the truck in reverse this time.
Ah, fuck,
Noah says like he knows what Caleb is about to do, and I whip my head around just as Caleb slams on the gas. Our truck heads straight for a row of bikes, and I grapple for the handle above my door, taking hold of it and squeezing my eyes shut as the truck drives right over the dirt bikes.
Caleb!
Jake yells, but it's too late. We rock side to side, crawling over the motorcycles, and my heart lodges in my throat, but I almost want to laugh, too. They deserved that.
You motherfucker!
I hear someone yell, and then a loud bark.
You're dead!
I look out the window and suddenly see two cops across the street, dressed in heavy jackets and winter hats, as they step out of their cruiser.
Oh shit! I gasp. Caleb, go now!
Noah yells, seeing what I'm seeing. He doesn't hesitate further. Before the officers can stop him, Caleb hits the gas, speeds off, and I look out the rear window, seeing the guys scramble for their bikes and the cops jump back in their car. The truck races through the night, the snow whipping across the windshield in the black night, and I slip my shoes back on. Caleb kills the headlights, as if the whole town doesn't know where we're going, and I peer over the back of his seat, trying to see what he sees in his rearview mirror. Lights trail us far back, and I hear the tires spin underneath us as the slick snow turns to ice. Jake flips on the defroster.
Are they really chasing us in this weather? I blurt out, looking behind me. Maybe you should stop.
They're on dirt bikes. It's freezing. This could get a lot worse than it already has if there's an accident. No one hears me, though.
Slow down,
Jake orders him. But Caleb doesn't listen. The truck fishtails, and Caleb jerks the wheel to the shoulder, using the gravel for traction as he gets us farther and farther up into the mountains. The bikes gain on us, since they're carrying less weight, but then I see a couple of headlights drop as if the bike slid. The others follow Caleb's example and use the shoulder as the cops' red and blue lights flash behind.
No, 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 this is bad.
We keep going, and I notice less lights behind us now as some of the racers giving chase decide to give up in the thick snowfall and save it for another day. Why are we running, though?
A bar fight isn't a big deal, but Caleb destroying property is. The pursuit won't end once we're behind our front door. All of a sudden, the police lights disappear. I watch their headlights, seeing them turn around and head back to town as well. They know where to find Caleb tomorrow, I guess. The tires skid under us, and the truck starts sailing backward. I suck in a breath, digging my nails into the back of Caleb's seat. We shouldn't be doing this. Oh my God, I mumble, looking down the cliff on my side of the truck, fear paralyzing me at the drop. The bikes behind us struggle to climb the road, and just as I'm about to suggest we stop or get out to walk back to the house, since we're less than a mile away, Caleb turns the wheel right and takes us off the road. The truck plummets into a ditch, and he punches the gas, taking us up into the forest, the truck moving more steadily through the trees. I look behind me, seeing the bikes fall behind, lost in the darkness, snow, and without Caleb's taillights to follow, they won't know where they're going. I don't think I breathe the entire way home. Caleb drives over the forest floor, taking us up to the house, and when he pulls the truck to a stop, we all climb out, looking around for any sign of the cops or racers.
"Get inside, now," Jake orders.
We run into the house, slamming the door behind us, and Noah falls back on the door, breathing hard. What did we do? There's going to be a punishment for that. They won't let it go. All of a sudden, though, Noah starts laughing, hysterically. I stand up and scowl down at him.
This isn't funny, I growl. Someone could have died. They'll still be up here once the snow stops. The cops will arrest him.
I look at Caleb, who's as cool as a cucumber, moving into the kitchen and whipping off his shirt, like he's getting ready for bed or some shit. Noah's laughter dies down and he rises, coming to stand next to me.
The snow won't stop, he tells me.
I meet his eyes as he pats my arm.
Until April, he finishes.
And he follows Caleb to the fridge for a beer. Chapter 16. Tiernan. There's already 3 inches on my balcony. The snowstorm rages, large clumps of bright white flakes falling to the ground with such density that I can barely tell it's night. I let out a silent laugh, peering through the windows of my double doors. The house is quiet, the guys went to bed long ago, but I can't sleep. I want to see this. It's so beautiful, and for some reason, I'm in heaven, despite Noah's griping about there being no civilization for the next 6 months. I have all I need right here. Jake had us tend to the horses before bed, but I still feel bad for them out there in the barn. The snow is definitely sticking, which means the ground temperature is as cold as the clouds. I turn around, shivering, as I fist my hands under my arms. I should put on the long underwear I bought, but I hate pants under the sheets. I walk over, deciding to stay in my silk shorts, buttoned down Oxford and wrapped in a blanket as I crawl into bed. But I spot something lying at the bottom of the bed and stop, walking over and picking up Caleb's belt, or the one he gave to me. I'd tossed it there when I came up earlier. Holding one end, I thread it through my fist, stretching it out to see the ornate carvings. He's kind of an artist, isn't he? I picture him working on this, probably in the loft or one of the rooms in the barn I haven't explored yet, where he has a place he won't be disturbed, or maybe in his bedroom. What's his room like anyway? I've never dared go up there, and the one time my uncle asked me to fold a load of laundry, none of Caleb's stuff was in the load, so even then I didn't have an excuse to go into his room like I do Noah's. I graze my thumb over the dream catcher. What was he thinking when he carved all this stuff? He must have thought of me. He spent time on this, a long time. I stare at the notches, absently walking over to my floor-length mirror as I thread the